Ignition sequence start.
See, Elijah Wan has David Robinson just bamboozled.
Kelly out of the corner for three.
Don't ever underestimate the heart of a champion.
The Houston Rockets select Yao Ming.
McGrady at the buzzer. Yes!
Paul touches it.
The doctor
goes to Hart. On Thompson steps right, shoots for the win. A three. He got it.
I know what we need to do. I know exactly what we need to do.
Russell Westbrook.
James Harden.
I know what's at stake.
It's going to be scary.
Not for us.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. I am your host, Jackson Gatlin, at JT Gatlin on Twitter, producer with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship here in Houston. Now, for today's episode, this is our first midweek mailbag of the season. Happened a little bit later than I would have liked for it to happen, but I'm going to try and make this a regular occurrence, maybe not once a week, maybe not even bi-weekly, but just trying to do something to kind of connect with you guys, feel these things out, see what y'all's questions are, and got some really good engagement, got some comments on Twitter, through the email, through Facebook, and that's exactly what I wanted to achieve out of this, give you guys an option to reach out, throw out any questions you may have. We've got a couple hypotheticals, we've got a lot of stuff to talk about, so without further ado, we'll just dive straight in. The first question I actually got was from at The Clutch City on Twitter. What would the Rockets look like today if they acquired LeBron last offseason instead of him going to LA? Now, that's an interesting one. That's a big what-if scenario. Now, obviously, first off, Eric Gordon and Ryan Anderson were part of that supposed trade package. If they were going to get LeBron James, the only way that it was feasible for that to happen was for LeBron to opt into his contract that final year in Cleveland and then be traded to the Houston Rockets. And there was so many rumors surrounding that whole situation because of the friendship between LeBron James and Chris Paul and whether or not they'd actually be able to pull a deal off of that magnitude. And it's such an interesting situation because that would have been a pair of teams that I don't think you could have ever said that two teams would have been that ridiculously stacked in history, because the Rockets would have been LeBron James, Chris Paul, James Harden, Clint Capella, plus whatever minimum level deals they were able to bring in, Gerald Green, to name one at least, Nene is still coming back, and then you'd have that team plus the other minimum contract deals that kind of follow LeBron everywhere he goes, plus then you'd have the powerhouse that was the Golden State Warriors still with Kevin Durant, with the Boogie Cousins signing, and that would have been an interesting pair of teams to see kind of try and clash throughout the playoffs. I'm not going to sit here and say that it would have resulted in a ring. They may not have been the clear-cut favorites. The LeBron, Harden, Chris Paul trio may not have meshed very well, but it would have been an interesting thing to see for sure. I like that hypothetical because we can knock it out of the way first. Doesn't matter because LeBron is in LA now. He is a Laker, probably for the remainder of his career, at least until his son makes it into the league and tries to play alongside him for a year or two. So that's an interesting one to kind of start things off for this midweek mailbag session. Now, our next set of questions, we got two from one person from at the Electrifying 2, the Electrifying Phenom. Do you think this will be MDA's last chance to getting this team to the finals? And then his second question, out of all the criticism this team gets, are any of those legit or is it bias against Houston? So I'll go with that first one first. Absolutely. MDA has had multiple opportunities to get this team to the promised land, and he just hasn't been able to pull through quite just yet. And it's credit to MDA. He's done a phenomenal job with this team, and he has consistently just run up against the Goliath that has been the Golden State Warriors. Granted, he had the 1 year against the Spurs, lost in round two. We had the very confusing game six from James Harden, as well as the, can't forget it, the Ginobili block on Harden at the end of game five. Just that series left a sour taste in everybody's mouths. So, of course, there's that. And you can easily point fingers at D'Antoni for that one, for not making adjustments, for running the seven-man rotation into the ground. But I don't think you can really fault D'Antoni too much for not being able to beat the Golden State Warriors. And everybody's going to think, okay, well, you can point to 0-27. You can point to the fact that they had leads in Game 6 and Game 7 against the Warriors. Even without Chris Paul, they had leads, double-digit leads, going into halftime of both of those games, and they could have very well easily won either one of those. But at the end of the day, the players have to be able to put the ball in the basket. And at least for the 0-27 comment from Game 7, I always like to point to the fact that Scott Foster waved off a perfectly good three-pointer by James Harden. He banked it in off the glass. It was a clear continuation call. It should have been a 3+1 with the foul being on Klay Thompson, and it wasn't. It got waved off, and that, to me, is the most painful thing that happened throughout that entire series. That, I think, was the deciding momentum killer. Because if that three had gone in, I feel like it's one of those moments where the floodgates would have just opened. That would have been the one three that they needed to fall, and then after that, everything else would have just become easy. Again, a lot of these what-if scenarios are hard to play with because you can go back and play the what-if scenario with almost anything in NBA history, but I feel pretty strongly about that one. So as far as D'Antoni and his last chance to get to the finals, I think there's a reason that his contract wasn't extended past the season. I think that if he doesn't get there with Russell Westbrook and James Harden this year, the Rockets will legitimately be looking for a new coach this next summer. Now, as far as the criticism that this Rockets team receives, I don't think it's necessarily bias against Houston. I just think it's people being misinformed and not caring enough to generate their own opinions about this team. For the most part, when people actually tune in to watch Rockets games and see James Harden play and realize that he isn't just some foul-baiting, head-snapping free-throw machine, and when they tune in and they watch him actually destroying defenses, 5-on-1, being essentially a one-man army on offense, carrying this team night in and night out, putting up historic numbers that can only be mentioned with the likes of Wilt Chamberlain and Michael Jordan, when they tune in and actually watch this guy play, they usually enjoy it. I've had friends who have told me, oh, you know, just James Harden, his style of play, just it isn't for me. I don't like it. It's not, you know, I just, and I'm like, how, when's the last time you watched him play? And I'm like, oh, I try not to watch. And I'm like, why? Why do you carry this opinion and you haven't watched him play? And these are the same people that, you know, they sometimes chime in with, but he doesn't play defense. And these are such old takes that don't have any merit anymore. And I think that, again, as the face of the franchise, any of the bias or criticism that Harden gets bleeds into the rest of the franchise. And you could sit here, too, and talk about the issues with regarding the referees, regarding the fact that the NBA maybe, I don't want to say they have it out for the Rockets, but the Rockets do tend to make a lot of noise about the officials. You had the whole Daryl Morey geopolitical crisis with China and things like that. Even though on the surface, the NBA would never come out and say, oh yeah, we definitely look at the Rockets as the black sheep of the NBA because they're constantly calling out our officiating or they're putting us in financial jeopardy with one of our biggest markets in the entire world. They're not going to come out and publicly say that, but in closed-door meetings, maybe, behind certain walls, these conversations may very well be happening. Because, again, those are some serious PR nightmares that the NBA has had to deal with, courtesy of the Houston Rockets. I mentioned it in just a few days ago that in some of these games, it feels like James is missing out on a significant number of calls that he would normally make, almost akin to how his fouls drop off from regular season to the playoffs, where the referees just start swallowing their whistles. It feels like it's happened in the regular season all of a sudden. And is that a result of the Rockets' protest of the San Antonio Spurs game with the James Harden missed dunk? Maybe. We'll never know because the NBA is never going to actually give us an official statement. But the Rockets are who they are, and they're going to make noise about the referees when they feel they're not doing their jobs, as will I, as will our special correspondent, Ben Dubose. If the refs aren't doing their jobs, they deserve to be called out for it. And if that makes the Rockets a target for the NBA, then so be it. But as far as just bias or criticism towards this team, I don't think any of it's warranted, honestly. Like, that's just my honest opinion. There's nothing wrong with this team calling out referees or calling out officials, whatever, for not doing their job to the best of their abilities, or for James Harden being upset in the middle of a game with a referee not making the right call. At the end of the day, all we want is the referees to do their job properly, and I think that's where a lot of the bias and criticism falls, is with the Rockets, you know, complaining about the refs. No, we're complaining about wanting to get the calls right. And if the calls are being made properly, then stop complaining. And that's that. So before we get out of here for segment one, I do want to drop in a quick line for our friends over at Spotify. If you're a Spotify listener, use the Spotify Wrapped feature and show us your top Locked On podcast for the year. Just take a screenshot, tag us at Locked On Live, as well as at JT Gatlin, my Twitter handle. Go ahead and tag Ben DuBose at Ben DuBose, and of course the show at Locked On Rockets, and we will share and retweet. And we are back in here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, going through our midweek mailbag of questions from you guys. And next, I'll switch it up. We'll actually dive into the email account for a second. So let's pull that up. All right. From Chris: does James Harden have a legitimate shot at winning another MVP award? As far as that, I want to say, yeah, absolutely. I mean, he has a legitimate shot, but the problem is, honestly, even though he's only won one MVP award, it's such a unique situation with him, because the MVP award that he won almost felt like a consolation prize. It almost felt like, okay, yeah, you know, Steph Curry's beat you out a couple times for it. Russell Westbrook beat you out 16-17. Here's an MVP award. Stop crying about it. That's almost what it felt like. It almost felt like MVP award voters, the national media, basically said, all right, Harden, here, fine. You were so far and above anybody else this year. We're just going to give you the MVP award because we can't make a legitimate argument for anybody else. And past that, it's just, I'd love to say that James is going to win another MVP award. He's on such a monstrous tear this season, averaging basically 39 points a game. And it's something that we've never seen done before. And yet it's somehow probably not going to be enough. The narrative probably just won't be in his favor. I honestly think it's leaning towards either a repeat for Giannis or LeBron James snatching up his fifth MVP award, quite possibly, with the way that the Lakers are playing. Now, AD will take some votes from LeBron. And Giannis, there's a bit of voter fatigue there as well. But even though James has only won the one MVP award, I worry that there's also a weird bit of voter fatigue for him as well, because he's been so consistently in the MVP conversation. It's almost like LeBron James, where earlier in his career, you could make the argument that LeBron should be the MVP every season, that you might as well just call it the LeBron James Award. And as far as James is concerned, he's been in that discussion so much that the voters might just be tired of tossing his name around. Again, he was right there, neck and neck, Steph Curry, year one. Then again, neck and neck, Steph Curry. Then it came down to him and Russell Westbrook, year three in a row. Then finally, he wins his award. And then last year, he loses it to Giannis. So he's been in the top two or top three of MVP voting for the past 5 years in a row, basically. And, oh, sorry, not 5 years in a row, because there was obviously the one down year for the Houston Rockets, the 15-16 season, where Steph Curry won unanimously. So apologies there. Got my wires crossed. But you guys get the idea. Basically, James has been in that discussion so much that I worried that the voters, basically, they take a look at him. They're like, you know what? No, we're going to pass on him. It's almost like they're looking for other narratives or other players to give the award to. And I'm not trying to be a salty fan or a biased person when it comes to this. It's just, it's right there. The national media don't like James Harden. It's ridiculous how often they talk about him and how often they kind of set things up to be shown in a negative light regarding James Harden. They won't talk about the fact that, I mean, he just lost out on Player of the Week, and he put up 47 something points a game with only 6 free throw attempts, and lost out Player of the Week to was it LeBron James from the West? I can't even remember who it was, because it wasn't as good as James. That's for damn sure. So as far as these awards go, yes, it would be great for James to line his closet with MVP trophies. It would be awesome. It would be great for his legacy, but there's only one thing that James should be concerned with as far as his legacy is concerned, and that is winning a championship as a Houston Rocket. So I think that needs to be on the top of his docket, and I think it is. I think last year he got a little bit preoccupied with the unguardable tour, maybe. Obviously, the Rockets needed it, but getting that back-to-back MVP was definitely on the forefront of his mind, and I don't want to say it was a distraction for the season because James is going to play out of his mind no matter what. But I think that this year, the focus is much less on him doing whatever it takes to win and more doing whatever the team needs him to do to win. And right now, the team needs him to score 39 points a game. That's totally fine. So he's doing that on a consistent basis, and we'll see. Maybe some of the other MVP candidates flame out, and maybe he's able to make a late-season push or a mid-season push for the MVP award. Again, it'd be great to see him win another one. I think he should have three or four by now. That's just my personal opinion. Now, we'll flip back to Twitter for these next couple questions. We've got LBJ will average a triple-double. At LBJ will average a triple-double. Earl Mack Duncanwood on Twitter. Why do you think Thabo Sefolosha gets so many more minutes than Gary Clark? Well, first off, we all know here at Locked On Rockets, I am a big Gary Clark fan, as are many of you on the social medias, on Twitter and on Facebook. Now, as far as the minutes going to Thabo over Gary, MDA just has this thing, right? He trusts veteran players, and for whatever reason that he just can't seem to get over the hump. Now, he has been more trusting of Gary as of late, and that has been a refreshing change of pace. He has showed that he's comfortable using Gary as essentially the Rockets' backup five, which it feels like Gary has officially beaten out Isaiah Hartenstein for that role, more or less, that Gary can play that small ball five behind Clint Capela and really space the floor and provide some really strong help defense off the ball, that kind of thing. As far as his shooting numbers, Gary's not shooting the ball particularly well. He's hovering right at about like 30% right now. So I really don't see why MDA is using Thabo over him right now, but if it's to just maybe stretch the rotation a little bit further, then I'm not opposed to it, especially when the Rockets are as thin as they have been. Say, you know, second night of a back-to-back, Westbrook's not playing. If you're going to run Thabo just for a little bit, that way you're not running an eight-man rotation, I'm okay with it. And if it's because MDA is confident in Gary's ability to run the backup five spot, then I'm even more okay with it. Because right now, that's kind of how the rotations look, is Thabo's checking in, and he's not checking in at the center position. Thabo's checking in as one of the wings. And then Gary Clark has been consistently starting that second quarter as the backup five, essentially. Because they're basically playing the PJ Tucker tuck wagon lineup for a brief spell, and then Gary Clark's been starting the top of the second quarter for the past, I want to say, like two, three, four games in a row. It's felt like Gary's been right there at the start of the second. So if that's MDA's logic for playing Thabo above Gary Clark, and as long as he doesn't go back to banishing Gary to the end of the bench upon Eric Gordon's return or in the games where Russ isn't sitting down on the second night of a back-to-back, perfectly fine by me. Thabo is not a terrible player. Thabo's not going to go out there and make horrible decisions. Now, is he a bit of a detriment on offense? Absolutely. He's got a very slow release. It's becoming very apparent why he only got 1-point-something attempts in Utah last season in 15 minutes of play. It's not because he wasn't getting the attempts. It's because he's just not shooting the ball. That is probably my biggest gripe with Thabo Sefolosha, is his release is slow. He refuses to shoot the ball. And very rarely does anything positive happen when he decides to put the ball on the floor instead of shooting. So his defense it's definitely not at the caliber that it once was, but Thabo's a smart defender and he's lengthy. And again, as long as Gary's minutes aren't being taken away, I don't see an issue with Thabo getting inserted before Gary Clark, which again, if Gary's going to play the backup five spot, then I get it. So for that question, as far as Tabo versus Gary, I think that's kind of some of the logic. And as long as Gary gets his minutes still when Eric Gordon comes back, I'm all for it. Now our next question, pretty good that we line these two up. Eric Gordon, concerning Eric Gordon, I should say, from at KCI3. How many minutes do you think EG will get upon his return? I'd guess probably around 20 minutes a night. He's going to be on a minutes restriction. Mike D'Antoni's already said that. And D'Antoni's already said, too, that Eric Gordon's progressing well. Basically, he didn't want to call him day-to-day, so we can probably sit here and say that he's week-to-week, I guess. But when Eric comes back, he's not going to be playing full-blown minutes right out of the gate. He is coming back and coming off the bench, so he's not going to come back and suddenly be thrown into the starting lineup, even with Daniel House's shooting struggles as of late. MDA is not just looking for an opportunity to toss in a new guy, a fresh face into the starting lineup. So EG will come back and will be in his sixth man of the year role. And again, it'll be like 20-something minutes per game, which means he'll get ample time to be paired up with Harden for a bit and with Westbrook for a bit to try and get back into his rhythm. And I'd imagine that his minutes restriction would probably be that way for about 2 to 3 weeks maybe before they get him back running his regular, probably about 30 minutes a game, 30 to 35 minutes a game, somewhere along those lines. Now, I do have one more question to get to from the Locked On Rockets email really quickly at the top of next segment. And we'll also talk a little bit about the game against the Clippers coming up here Thursday evening. So don't go anywhere. All right, and we are back in here for our final segment at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, rolling through our midweek mailbag before we get to talking about the Rockets and Clippers game Thursday evening. Now, for our final question, it comes from the email account. Where is it? Let me pull it back up. Oh, hang on. There it goes. Do you buy the Rockets as a legitimate contender, or are they just waiting for a first-round flameout? Signed, a frustrated Rockets fan. Whew, okay. So, I've spoken about this before, and in fact, I was on SB Nation Radio earlier this evening talking about it with Gary Aide. And basically, he asked me a similar question, and I'll share a similar answer. It's too soon to tell with this team. I think with James Harden and Russell Westbrook, we had these immediate expectations of grandeur at the start of the season. We thought we were going to be getting the 16-17 Russell Westbrook right out of the gate. We were imagining two MVPs sharing the court with each other. And regrettably, this set of players, James and Russ, they don't complement each other quite as well as James and Chris did, or as the pairing of Steph Curry and Kevin Durant did, but they are still two of the best players in the entire NBA. And it's taken a little bit of time to see them gel and kind of work things out. And obviously there have been some defensive issues on the side, as well as not really having a truly healthy roster yet to this point in the season. You started the season and James Harden was in a shooting funk, as well as you had Eric Gordon playing injured. Then you lose Eric Gordon to injury. You have Westbrook, who has had his ups and downs, but as of recently has really kind of started to fit the mold and play exactly the way that Rockets fans wanted him to play starting the season. James Harden is now doing James Harden things, and the rest of the lineup seems to be producing at a pretty steady clip. And so getting Eric Gordon back near the end of this month or the beginning of January, adding him to this current lineup of players, I think the talent is all there. I think the talent is undeniable, and this team has a legitimate shot to win a title. I think that we're forgetting just how crucial Eric Gordon has been to this team's success over the previous years, and to just turn your nose up at the fact that he's played the starting bit of the season hurt and not to the level that we expect Eric Gordon to play at, and then on top of that, to disregard his return to the lineup. Eric is going to give this team such a significant boost that the fact that they've played as well as they have to this point sans Eric Gordon, I legitimately think that once he's back and in the rotation, having that option next door to Russ in the Russ-only lineups is going to be huge. Having another guy who can attack the basket, who can create his own shot, who can get hot at any moment throughout a game, that's going to be a huge get for this Rockets team. So yeah, I do buy them as a contender. I think that right now the Lakers and Bucks are the clear-cut favorites, and they've earned that. They've played phenomenally well to start the season. But in the Western Conference, at least, while the Mavs have had a bit of a hot start, I don't think that they've got the experience needed to make significant noise in the playoffs. And as far as the Nuggets and Clippers are concerned, and then you've got the Rockets right there in that mix as well. It's basically those four teams. It goes the Lakers, then it goes Clippers, Mavericks, Nuggets, Rockets. Those are kind of your two tiers in the Western Conference right now. And I think once Eric Gordon gets back, we're going to see the Rockets stack up a bunch of wins and kind of separate themselves from the rest of the West. Because, again, missing a guy of that quality, who on any given night you could argue is your third best player on the court, or even sometimes your second best player on the court, depending on how one of James Harden or Russell Westbrook performs, similarly to James Harden and Chris Paul, on any given night, Eric Gordon might be better than one of those two guys, depending on if they're in a shooting slump or whatever. If the defense is loading up on James one evening, then Chris and Eric were able to go off. Same thing can happen now. If the defenses are going to focus on James Harden, which we've seen a lot of so far, we've seen that really hardcore double-team trap of James Harden right at the half-court line, or just the aggressive double-team the moment he touches the ball on any offensive possession. We've seen that from a number of teams. We may very well see that again against the Clippers. If that's going to be the case moving down the line, Eric Gordon prevents that or makes it easier to beat at that point. Because if you have Eric Gordon and Russell Westbrook on the court, and then you're going to try and trap James Harden, good luck. Like, I'm sorry, the only reason they're able to do that right now is because for the most part you have James and Russ on the court, and then past that, there's not another guy who can really create his own shot. Austin Rivers a little bit, but having Eric Gordon there, a guy who knows exactly what to do if he's got an open lane to the basket or a wide open three-point shot, he's going to torch teams if teams continue to try and effectively run this double team against James. So yeah, I do buy the Rockets as a legitimate contender. I don't think they're waiting on a first round flameout. I think that when you've got two guys as talented as James and Russ are, they're going to find a way to make it work. And that just makes you all that much harder to beat in the playoffs. Because in a 7-game series, you can usually expect James to bring his A game for the most part all the time. But there's going to be those one-off games, right, where he just doesn't bring it. The defense is too much, or he just doesn't have his shot that night. And the fact that you have another guy like Westbrook who can step up and truly dominate a game. Those games were few and far between for Chris. Let's try that again. Those games were few and far between for Chris Paul. As he got older, it's just harder and harder for players as they age to have these dominant performances like they could earlier in their career. Westbrook is still capable of these dominant performances. Chris Paul is also still capable of them, but they're just harder. They don't come nearly as often, and in last year's playoffs against a weakened Golden State team, we really needed one of those performances from him, and we just couldn't get it. This year, I'm hopeful that Russell Westbrook will be able to step up when his name is called, when the production from James isn't there, or when the rest of the role players just don't have it on any given evening. I'm hopeful that Russ is able to answer the call and help carry this Rockets team over a stretch of, you know, a half, a game, a series maybe even, all the way to the finals. I buy this team as a legitimate title contender, and I think that basically sums up that answer, or sums up that question. So, as far as the Rockets-Clippers game this Thursday evening, it's the first of this West Coast swing. Oh, well, I guess before I dive too much into that, thank you everybody who submitted questions. I sincerely appreciate it. Again, I started the midweek mailbag a little bit later in the season than I would have hoped, and we'll see it return here in the not-so-distant future. But for everybody who put in questions, whether it was through Twitter, through Facebook, or through the email, I sincerely appreciate it. We'll do this again sometime soon. Hopefully we'll get a little bit more interaction as well as we continue to do it and make it more of a regular thing. But again, thank you to everybody who submitted their questions. And that basically wraps up our midweek mailbag. So now we can dive into the Rockets and Clippers game just a little bit. Just a few minutes here, but you know, this Rockets-Clippers matchup, they're 1-1 on the season so far. And the last game that these two played, it came down to the wire. It came down to that missed opportunity by Russell Westbrook at the three-point line that a lot of fans were clamoring for, even myself included. I was saying, you know what? I didn't like the shot. I really didn't. And this was still in the earlier part of the season where I think that Westbrook was definitely still struggling with some of his decision making. I think that was an after effect of the fact that he wasn't physically all the way there. I think that now that he's got the wraps off of his fingers, that maybe his legs are feeling, he's got his legs back under him. He's got his stamina back where he's used to having it. His endurance is back to the level that he needs it at to play to the level that he wants to play at. And the tear that he's been on lately as far as his ability to get to the cup at will, and it seems like he's finally getting back to the Westbrook that we used to love to hate. There we go. The Westbrook that could get to the cup at will, would, you know, have these acrobatic soaring layups, and you just have no idea how the guy's making them. I mean, he single-handedly kept us in the Spurs game for that first half, and then James Harden stepped it up in the second half, and they were able to come away with the biggest win from 25 points down in franchise history. So if that's the Westbrook we're going to consistently get, if that's the Westbrook that shows up against the Clippers, then I like the Rockets' chances. They have Daniel House in this game, which they didn't have in the last game against these two, and Daniel House is crucial to have when you're facing a lineup of Kawhi Leonard and Paul George. You need Daniel House and PJ Tucker on the court for as many minutes as possible to match up with those two guys. So not having Daniel House in the last matchup between these two teams did hurt a bit. So as far as this game is concerned, I'm feeling pretty good about going into this game. Even off of the recent loss against the Detroit Pistons and even against the Spurs, a game that shouldn't have been that close, you know, there's no, when a guy like Bryn Forbes hits 5 or 6 three-pointers in the first half of a game, none of them were completely wide open looks. I mean, some of them he had literally just curled off of a pick and launched a three in about half a second worth of space. So if a player goes 5 of 5 or 6 of 6 from the three-point line in one half of basketball, sometimes you just got to chalk that up to this guy's just shooting lights out tonight. Doesn't matter if he's got a hand in his face or not. We've been on the good side of many of those games for James Harden. Sometimes we take it for granted that if a player gets hot, he's going to carry that team. And that was part of the reason the Spurs got so far ahead of the Rockets in that game, was simply just the shooting from Bryn Forbes. So even though the Rockets haven't been as dominant as we would have hoped that they would be to this date, as far as some of the lesser teams in the NBA, the Clippers have been dominant. If you go back and look at all the different wins that the Clippers have, they're beating the teams they're supposed to beat, and they're beating them by wide margins. We're talking double-digit wins against the teams that they're supposed to beat. Now, the Clippers do have a handful of questionable losses. Basically, you know, they lost to Chicago a couple games ago, 109-106. They lost to Milwaukee. They got thumped by Milwaukee, 119-91. And then they also lost to San Antonio, 107-97. So they're 7-3 in their last 10. They're sitting at 21-8 on the season. But this is an important game. This is a game that could come down to be important as far as a tiebreaker is concerned. Again, you're sitting at 1-1 on the series right now. You can go 2-1 if you win the game, jump up a little bit further in the standings. And I think these two teams do play each other a bit further down the line. So it's important to at least go 2-2 on the series, because the Rockets will probably be, they'll probably be the top of the Southwest Division. I do see them finishing ahead of the Mavs. So as far as tiebreakers are concerned, that'll be helpful there if they have the head-to-head tiebreaker and then they have the division tiebreaker afterwards. Or even, sorry, if they're tied head-to-head and then they have the division tiebreaker, that'll be huge further down the line. But again, I'm confident going into this game. I think the Rockets actually match up pretty well with the Clippers, all things considered. They've got a couple wings to help try and guard Kawhi and PG. They've got Austin Rivers, whose minutes you can try and match up with Lou Williams off the bench as much as possible, which is exactly what they did the last two times these teams have played. They've matched up Austin Rivers beautifully. Coach D'Antoni has done a good job of subbing him in and keeping him on top of Lou Williams, and Austin makes it hard on Lou. Austin keeps Lou from, I mean, Lou's going to score no matter what, but Austin's on-ball defense is phenomenal, and he has definitely done a good job these first couple meetups with the Clippers of at least making it hard on Lou Williams to score the ball. So that's important there. And again, anytime you've got James Harden and Russell Westbrook on your team, I think with the ability for either of those two guys to go off on any given night and take over a game, you have a legitimate shot against anybody in this league. And I think that we will see that on display a little bit later tonight against the Clippers. Again, that's a 9:30 tip-off. So it's the second game of a national TV back-to-back. You got Lakers Bucks first and then Rockets Clippers right afterwards. So a couple awesome games back-to-back. I know that I'm going to be having some people over to watch the game. I don't know about you guys, but it's going to be a great evening for basketball all around. I think that's where we will wrap things up for today. As always, thank you so much for tuning in. Now, if you want more content before our next show, social media is where it's all happening. I'm on there at JT Gatlin. The show is on there, of course, at Locked On Rockets. Past that, there's Facebook, which can be found at facebook.com/LockedOnRockets. The website, LockedOnRockets.com. And, of course, our email address, LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. All of these are different ways to consume content about your Houston Rockets. You can ask me questions about the team, make suggestions for the show, place advertising inquiries, reach out for our new midweek mailbag. Really, it's just a way for you to let me know if there's anything that we can do to improve this experience for you, our listeners. Beyond that, if you'd be kind enough to subscribe and rate the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Himalaya, wherever it is that you listen to your podcasts, if you could please subscribe and give us a 5-star review. That's how you get the benefit of episodes straight to your inbox before they're published to the previously mentioned social media outlets, and we get the benefit of looking attractive to potential advertisers and keeping this business model rolling along as the most regular podcast covering Houston Rockets basketball. Now, for this Wednesday evening episode, December 18th, this is where we break. As always, thank you so much for listening, and we hope to have you back again very, very soon right here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.